胡主席先生，您在我们的国家是我们最尊敬的客人，希望你们能够休息一下，看我们美丽的地方，看我们好看的风景，以及我们美丽的城市。 President Hu, may I wish you and your party every success in Australia, and I join the Prime Minister in welcoming your gift of pandas to Australia. Mr. President, should my party be successful in the next election, we would also welcome pandas coming to my home city of Brisbane.
The then leader of the opposition, Kevin Rudd, welcomed Chinese President Hu Jintao to the APEC forum in Sydney last year. But of course now it's 2009 and President-elect Barack Obama may be cooler towards China than George W. Bush. He may take a much harder line on trade issues. So what does this new set of possibilities mean for Australia and its Mandarin-speaking Prime Minister? Is this an opportunity for middle power diplomacy? To discuss these issues, we're joined now by Dr. John Lee from the Centre for Independent Studies. Welcome to Counterpoint.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Now, John Lee, since the election of Kevin Rudd, what role have China's state-sponsored media been encouraging our Prime Minister to play with regard to China and America? What are they saying our Prime Minister should do?
We've seen a lot of noises coming out of the Chinese media urging Kevin Rudd to be a bridge of sorts between China and America. Various terms like a bridge for better understanding is being used. But it's basically for Australia to play some sort of middle role between America and China.
And if this is in state-sponsored media, this is the state speaking, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
Now, that's pretty flattering for a middle prime minister to be asked to play this bridge role, is it not?
It is very flattering, but we have to be very careful. We should accept the compliment, but we should actually politely decline such a role. China views the competition for influence with the Americans in a region as a zero-sum game. If Australia were to attempt to play this role of bridge between these two big powers, I think we could end up disappointing the Chinese and annoying the Americans. Now, that would be, I think, a strategic and diplomatic debacle.
Why are they asking us to play this role?
The Chinese realise that Australia does have a special relationship with the Americans. However, the Chinese also realise that unlike a lot of countries in Southeast Asia and in East Asia, Australia probably has the most benign view of Chinese long-term strategic intentions in the region. So the Chinese certainly see this as a period of strategic opportunity.
Now, you've written, you say China's a rising power and they look upon us as playing a role between China and America, but you say it's a rising power that's insecure, and yet one looks at China's trade surpluses, one looks at the, especially given the current financial situation, China, why would they be insecure at the moment?
Well, bear in mind that this financial situation has hit China hard. China's growth has been revised down from 11-12% to 7-8%.
But compared to the rest of the world?
Well, 7-8% sounds pretty damn good. But in a Chinese context, that's a virtual recession. China needs 8% growth just to maintain current levels of employment. Now, when you bear in mind that in addition to this, there are still 1 billion poor people in China, the situation for political and social instability is still pretty hairy in China.
Can you talk us through that a bit? A lot of commentators have made this point that how many people have to be brought in to urban jobs each year just to keep the economy going?
Well, there are 20 million Chinese entering workforce each year, and of these 20 million, it's estimated that around 18 million have to be brought in into urban regions, not rural regions. Now, the urban regions are already flooded with workers, and in fact, a lot of them are actually being sent back to the rural regions in China. So you are seeing a spike in unemployment in China right now, and you are seeing a spike in social unrest in China right now.
These two, of course, correlated. No jobs, then you have social unrest.
Yeah, they are correlated, and it's extremely dangerous for the government there. In the last 20, 30 years, there's been a kind of implicit social compact. The Chinese government will provide growth and stability and jobs for its people, and its people in return will accept the role of the party to rule exclusively. Now, of course, this is all preconditioned on economic growth.
So unless the economy keeps growing at 8-9%, you're going to have unemployed people and social unrest, which increases internal insecurity. But talk us through the geopolitics of the region. How does China view Russia and how does China view India?
That's actually a very interesting question. To its north, you have a vast border, a shared border between China and Russia. Currently, you have unresolved territorial disputes. They've been stabilised, but they're unresolved. You have literally tens of millions of people from China creeping upwards towards the Siberian landmass. Now, that's going to be a huge issue in a few years' time. With India, and I think, an even more interesting issue. Ever since China has remilitarised the Tibetan Plateau, a lot of Chinese missiles are stationed in Tibet. Indian and Chinese tensions have been rising. It's not something that gets a lot of press in the West, but it's certainly something the Americans are well aware of.
How does China relate to Pakistan in this context?
Pakistan is desperately searching for a new friend beyond America, a new great power friend. China realises that there's no real future in that. Pakistan is really a country in a mess, and China realises that it doesn't serve its own self-interest by becoming too close to Pakistan.
Now, China would look upon India as an American ally. Would that be correct?
Yes, it would. India has a very strange relationship with the Americans. They are strategic partners of sorts, but the Indians would never admit this. The Chinese, because of the rise of China, the Indians see no option but to move closer to Americans. You've seen the Americans, for example, lower barriers to selling uranium to India. That is an enormously significant move.
Yes, yes. Now, you've written that China feels, apart from India, that feels encircled by American allies. So what countries is China judged to be firm US allies that she sees encircling her?
Yeah. Well, I use the term encircle very deliberately. When you look at China's eastern and southeastern coastal borders, you have American forces stationed in Japan, you have American forces stationed in Taiwan, you have American forces stationed in South Korea, and you have American forces stationed in Philippines. That comes as close to encirclement as you can get geographically and strategically. Moreover, the whole South China Sea and the whole Pacific is pretty much patrolled by the American Seventh Fleet. American naval primacy is absolute right now.
Yes. It's interesting to recall at the beginning of the presidency of George W. Bush, which is 8 years ago, tensions between America and China were very high in terms of Air Force incidents and so on. Now, but on the other side, you say China sees itself as an outsider in an American-led liberal order, but in a recent editorial in the China Daily, which is written for overseas consumption, it says, one of the truly significant successes of the Bush presidency is the establishment of the SEDs, which is semi-annual dialogues, which opened up real-world possibilities to anchor the once volatile bilateral ties. Now, that doesn't sound like the tone of an outsider. Am I missing something there?
To be honest, I think you are. I mean, when you look at that one editorial, yes, it doesn't. But let's look at the longer-term picture that the Chinese have. Bush, as you mentioned, started off in a pretty prickly fashion with the Chinese. Then September 11th occurred, and the Americans have been pretty distracted by the war on terror since then. However, the Chinese believe that this is temporary. The Chinese believe that conflict with the Americans will be structural, that is, a hegemon against a rising great power.
Well, summarising your argument, we've got perhaps weak economic forces, and externally, China perhaps has a lot of enemies. We've run out of time, but Dr. Lee, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Dr. John Lee is with the Pro-Free Market Centre for Independent Studies, and that's it from us this week.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.